I'm going to be reading out of the Old Testament, one of the minor prophets, Micah chapter 5, verses 1 through 5a. Now you are walled around with a wall. Siege is laid against us. With a rod they strike the ruler of Israel upon the cheek. But you, O Bethlehem of Ephrathah, who are one of the little clans of Judah, from you shall come forth for me one who is to rule in Israel, whose origin is from old, from ancient days. Therefore he shall give them up until the time when she who is in labor has brought forth. Then the rest of his kindred shall return to the people of Israel. And he shall stand and feed his flock in the strength of the Lord, in the majesty of the name of the Lord his God. And they shall live secure, for now he shall be great to the ends of the earth, and he shall be the one of peace. Micah is talking about a little clan, a little town. Morgantown's a little town. A lot of you are born and raised in this area. Maybe not here. You were born and raised in another little town. Little towns kind of have a funny reputation just from being little towns. So if you've lived in a little town, you can kind of relate to some of this. City limits, the signs are on both sides of the post. Your car breaks down outside of town and the news of it gets back to town before you do. Without thinking, you wave at all oncoming traffic. You know you live in a small town when the New Year's baby is born in October. A night on the town only takes 11 minutes. The local phone book has only one yellow page. You know you live in a small town when you call a wrong number and they supply you with the correct one. It takes 30 seconds to reach your destination and it's clear across town. Well, you kind of get the idea. Small towns just really don't get a lot of respect. But to me, I think a small town is a more loving, caring town. People know each other. You know your neighbors. You take care of your neighbors. You know what's going on around you. So many big cities today, you don't even know who your next door neighbor is. You don't know what's going on around you. The love and caring, maybe. But small towns, that's really where life is. That's where caring and love is. Pastor John Ortberg makes a joke about the city of Fresno, and it's not really that small a town. He says people go to Hollywood because they want to get famous. People go to Silicon Valley because they want to get rich. People go to Fresno because they got bad directions. It's a town of respectable size, but it's not Hollywood. It's not Silicon Valley. You could consider it a smaller town. Small towns have produced some great people. Abraham Lincoln came from a city called Knob Creek, Kentucky. It doesn't even exist anymore. It was so small. Jimmy Carter still calls Plains, Georgia home. Population 611. And of course, the greatest person who ever lived came from a small town of Bethlehem. A small town. Micah tells us, but you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, though you are small among the clans of Judah, out of you will come for me one who will be ruler over Israel. Those words were written 700 years before Caesar Augustus decided to take a census and decreed everyone to go to their original hometown. And that's what caused Joseph and Mary to travel to Bethlehem. Because Joseph belonged to the lineage of David. And that's where David originated. That's going home. What some of you may not realize is Mary was also of the lineage of David. And that's where the bloodline actually comes to Jesus from David, is through Mary. When they got there, unfortunately, because there were so many people, there was no place for them to stay. So they wound up in a stable, a place considered very lowly, very small. And they wrapped Jesus in whatever they had with them. I read recently some guy doing a story about the things that were the way they were back then. And this swaddling cloth, apparently, because these people traveled the desert, and they never knew when something might befall them, they would wrap a it's kind of like a cheesecloth, not quite that thin, but a thin linen around themselves so that if something happened to them while they were traveling, they would wrap them in that and bury them in it. They were prepared. It was more of a death cloth than a birth cloth. So it's almost as though when they wrapped Jesus in the swaddling cloth, they were wrapping in him something prepared for a life which he knew would end in death. It was all connected together. And the angel came to the shepherds just outside of this little city and proclaimed to them what was happening right now in that town. And after they proclaimed this to them, the heavenly host started singing and praising God. And I think most of us remember the angel coming and all of that because little Linus on Charlie Brown. And I'll tell you what Christmas is all about, Charlie Brown. So we all remember that verse pretty well. But now let's talk about Bethlehem a little bit. The world didn't know, but that was where, at that time, all the truly important people were. Joseph, Mary, and Jesus, and the shepherds. There were no kings at the Nativity. There were no kings there when Jesus was born. They didn't come until a couple of weeks later. If you'll read in the Bible, it says they went to his home, not the manger. But I think most people in that day would think that Rome was the place where most of the important people were. That's where Caesar Augustus was. That's where the Roman Senate was. That was the place where everything was happening. And so people just automatically felt that was the most important place. But the most important place this night was Bethlehem. That was the beginning of a difference to all the world, to us today. That was the beginning of great things to happen in our world. Back in 1865, right after the Civil War, the Holy Trinity Church in Philadelphia sent their pastor, their rector, a guy named Philip Brooks, overseas. And in his travels, he wound up in Jerusalem. And he thought while he was there, he would retrace some of the steps of Jesus. And he retraced all the way back to his birth. And it just turned out that he happened to be at Bethlehem on Christmas Eve when there was a big celebration. And in that spot where Jesus was born, they believe Jesus was born, is a church now. And in that church, there was great singing and praising. And he said it sounded almost as though angels' voices were singing in this church. It really impressed upon him the holiness of that night and the holiness of that situation there in that little church in that little town of Bethlehem. 2 years later, when he returned to his church, he wrote the song, "O Little Town of Bethlehem, how still we see thee lie. Above thy deep and dreamless sleep, the silent stars go by. Yet in thy dark streets shineth the everlasting light. The hopes and fears of all the years are met in thee tonight." Micah was the first one to announce where Christ would be born. And he was in that same time period as Isaiah. Of course, everybody thinks about Isaiah. Isaiah had some great things that he's told us, great things that he predicted. But Micah was in that same time frame, but not as well known. But Micah actually preached against injustice. And he actually saved Israel at one point because he's the one that brought Hezekiah, the king, to repentance. So there's a big contrast between Isaiah, that everybody knows, and Micah, this minor prophet that very few people think about. Just like this small little town of Bethlehem, we've got this small prophet who is telling about Bethlehem. God likes to use small packages to make big things happen. And that's where all this comes from. Bethlehem actually means the house of bread. And if you'll think about it, that's a great place for the birthplace of a spiritual king, of our king, because he is the bread of life. So the bread of life came from, was born in the house of bread. Kind of interesting. And it's just neat to me how everything always ties together like that. Bread of life. Bread is one of the most common things to us. You can survive on bread and water. For how long, I don't know, but you could survive on bread and water. The bread of life. It was something that was well known to the common man. Not kings or senators or great people like that. It was common to the common man. It would have been common in a lowly stable, in a small community like Bethlehem. Jesus didn't come from a big religious leadership family. He came from a lowly couple who were what we would consider today probably lower middle class or poor. And that's all by God's intention. He wanted it that way. Because we can see in ourselves, because we, in the whole vast universe, are small. We're here in a small town, but we mean great things to God. And that's important. God wanted us to identify with a small, poor family. He wanted us to identify with the situation and the surroundings in Bethlehem at Jesus' birth. He wanted us to identify with those lowly things, because we are still so important to Him, even though we are lowly. Pastor Matthew Rogers writes, "When a new king is born, you can hear shots of artillery and a 41-gun salute. When a new king is born, flags billow and chapel bells peal loud, clanging music into the night. When a new king is born, champagne corks stream through the air by the thousands. When a new king is born, people stand together and sing choruses in the street. When a new king is born, clouds of euphoria make millions of people feel like they are members of one harmonious family." He says, at least that's the way one newspaper article says it was on June 21st, 1982, when the future king of England came into the world, young Prince William, born of Charles and Diana. But that's not the way Jesus came into the world. There was no fanfare, no champagne corks, no chapel bells pealing. It was all very quiet, very subdued, in a small stable in a little manger. Doug Connolly says, imagine coming upon a young woman giving birth today in an abandoned car, in an alley, in an urban city, all by herself. So you can kind of visualize how things were back then and how they would be today if he would have been born today. He'd have probably been born in an abandoned car in an alley somewhere, off away from everything, quietly born. And the whole scene, the whole thing we see and visualize with this nativity, it's a very miraculous thing to us that here God gave us His only Son as a little baby, a poor baby, to save us. Fred Buchner, in his book, Listening to Your Life, he writes, when this child was born, the whole course of human history was changed. That is a truth that is as unassailable as any truth. Art, music, literature, Western culture itself, with all its institutions and Western man's whole understanding of himself and his world, it is impossible to conceive how differently things would have turned out if that birth had not happened, whenever, wherever, and however it did. And there is a truth beyond that for millions of people who have believed since. The birth of Jesus made possible not just a new way of understanding life, but a new way of living life. The truth of this incarnation should never cease to amaze us. The mystery of the eternal, cradled in a manger, elicits awesome wonder and grateful praise. Now notice what he says about life. The birth of Jesus made possible not just a new way of understanding life, but a new way of living life. When you become a Christian, you find a new way of living life. You're a different person. Totally different person. So let's talk about that a little bit. A new way of understanding life. It says you can listen to a cricket chirping in a field, and that cricket in that field has no knowledge of other crickets in other fields, some close, some far away, some across the road. They just have no knowledge of those other crickets. It's his one little world, that field that he's chirping in. And so you can think of ancient man, no knowledge of countries and continents across the seas, his own little community in his own little world. He knows nothing else. So you can think of worlds unknown to us, the outer limits of the universe, about which we really know very little about. A little ball of mud in the middle of the universe, and that's our lifetime. That's our whole world. But once in a while, God opens up a window into that larger heavenly world. And he opened that night in Bethlehem when angels appeared to the shepherds. It is a world of heavenly messengers who do God's bidding, a world of peace, in a world where all glory is given to God. All of that we learn from that one little night in Bethlehem. How to understand life as it is. Jesus' birth made possible a new way of living life. We hear people ask, why can't we keep this Christmas spirit all year long? I ask you the same thing. Why can't we keep the spirit of Christmas all year long? Why do we have to isolate the spirit of Christmas to November and December? Although the stores keep getting it earlier and earlier. Christmas, the spirit of Christmas, should be something that is in us and around us all year long. It's not just something that happens around Christmas. That spirit that goes with it should be with us always. It's how we are kind to strangers. It's how we treat others. It's how we see each other and how we interrelate with each other. It's living a Christian life all year long. Back during the Nazi occupation in Austria, there was a young family, a mother and some children. The dad in the family was a Methodist pastor, but he was away. And you have to understand, during the Nazi occupation, they had rules against practicing religion. They had rules about turning off your lights at a certain time of the evening. And they had soldiers marching up and down the street to make sure that this is the way it happened. But this was Christmas Eve. And traditionally on Christmas Eve, this family would read the Bible, they would pray together, and they would sing hymns. Well, they went through the Bible study and they went through the praying, and then one of the young children in the family kept wondering to himself, how are we going to do the music with the soldiers marching up and down the street? They had a little piano in this house. And so finally, one of the children asked, Mom, are we going to be able to sing hymns? And without hesitation, she got up and sat at that piano, and yes, we are singing hymns tonight. And they did. They celebrated singing hymns, irregardless of the fear of the soldiers marching up and down the street. They sang, Oh, come all ye faithful, joyful and triumphant, come ye, oh, come ye to Bethlehem. When we sing hymns on Sunday morning, we don't have to fear somebody coming and dragging us away. We don't have to fear how we celebrate Christianity. We don't have to fear how we celebrate Christmas. God has made that possible for us. We live in a free nation, a blessed nation. We have young men and women around the world giving their lives for that freedom. But because they do, we can live in our small communities and we can love one another. We can care about each other at Christmas. We hear all kinds of great Christmas stories, things that have happened in this community. The many, many children that the youth center helped the other day. I saw pictures of it. There was a room full of packages. And by the time they were done, there was a few scattered packages here and there. The schools have helped the underprivileged kids. Businesses in the community have stepped up and provided funds to help purchase things, to help the poor and the needy in the community. And that's what small communities are about. That's what living in a small town like Bethlehem is all about. It's about love and caring. It's about that small town called the House of Bread, where the bread of life came to you and me, so that we might celebrate Christmas every year, throughout the year, and be Christ to others.